You rocking with the village. Welcome to the village. It's your man KJ. We are live. As you guys can obviously tell, we're over here talking about stuff. Eva Marie, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's a day off, so I'm a little more relaxed than normal.
You're not discombobulated?
I am discombobulated. No, I'm just, you know, I'm just a little more comfy than normal. I'll put it that way.
Gotcha. gotcha.
It's a little more comfy than normal.
Okay. Anyways, Village, we got so many different topics we're going to be discussing here, and we're kind of going to give you guys not necessarily a quick show, but we're going to give you a show. And there it is. So, Village, join me. Okay, Eve Marie, for the sake of time, let's jump into this first topic. Yes, this is called live podcasting. You just kind of like, you got stuff going on in your life and in everything, okay, let me go ahead and just jump on
he
this.
He doesn't have an Eva Marie like poking at him yet that he needs to hurry himself up.
Yes. No, keep it 100. Yes, you are.
Keep it 100. I left you alone. Instead of poking at you today, I should have poked at you a little more.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Mm-hmm. This is true. All right. So this is our first story. We have a village hero first story here. Let's go ahead and screen share with you guys. With the Navajo Nation hit hard by COVID-19, this CNN hero's mission to help vulnerable elders has a new urgency. I particularly chose this story just because of your heritage. I was like, gotta cover stuff like this, man. You know, gotta cover these stories. Before COVID-19 hit, elders living on the Navajo Nation were already amongst the most vulnerable. As the virus spread, their situation became even more dire. On the Navajo Nation, spanning more than 27,000 square miles across parts of Arizona, Utah, and New Mexico, an estimated 30% of the residents don't have access to running water, making early hand washing guidance impossible to adhere to. Many other factors put them at a greater risk: a lack of resources, information, and access to masks and medical care, on top of poor infrastructure and insufficient housing conditions. At one point, the Navajo Nation experienced COVID-19 infection rates that were among the highest per capita in the United States. While the number of new cases has been trending downward, Navajo elders are still dying at alarming rates. There are many, many elderly people on the reservation that are homebound and alone, said CNN hero Linda Myers, whose nonprofit provides life-saving supplies for Native American elders. Some of the elders live 60 miles from a grocery store. Many of them are traditional and don't have running water or electricity. To date, Navajo Nation has reported nearly 9,000 positive cases of COVID-19 and 453 deaths. That is really high.
That is really tough. Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of people. For such a small section of the country. More than 60% of the deceased were age 60 and older. So you guys are, not only are you losing elders, but you're losing knowledge. You're losing wisdom. Yeah. You're losing tradition as well. Because these are the people in every walk of life. Your elders are the ones that will sit you down on the porch and pass these knowledge, pass this stuff on to you.
So now within that particular cultural group, the elder, you know, the elders are revered as being, and as they should be, as being, you know, the ones, they're the ones that pass on the traditions that have basically been culturally beat out of people. You know, these are the people that still have these traditions that can tell you, you know, this is what this means, this is what this is means, this is why we do these things. You know, a lot of stories are verbal. Yeah, so it's big. They were hit so hard.
Yeah, and that's what it sounds like here. All right, Myers has spent decades supporting Navajo elders through her nonprofit, Adopt a Native Elder, which currently serves more than 750 people ages 75 to 105. She says 26 elders in her program have died, and the pandemic has also increased the elders' isolation and fear. We have families with the virus at different hospitals across the reservation, Myers said. One of our elders lost her son, her daughter, her sister, and her sister's daughter. Losing Navajo elders is devastating, Myers said. Not just to family and loved ones, but for Navajo history. And we just said that. It's all about the history.
Yeah.
They hold the life for their families. They carry on their traditions, the ceremony, the language, the weaving. All the things come from these elders' teachings, she said. It's a piece of history, a piece of culture. So this is right here, Village. This is Miss Linda Myers. She has a nonprofit. It's called Adopt a Native Elder. And as far as I'm concerned, that makes her a hero, because the Native culture is such a marginalized piece of America. You know, like it's they're very marginalized. And the amount of poverty and things that hit you know, our natives is...
The Navajo Nation especially. The Navajo Nation is a lot like the Lakota Sioux. You know, their reservations and where they were forced to go was desolate. It's very desolate, and they've made a beautiful, you know, they've done their best they could and made a beautiful thing out of where they do live and keeping their culture alive. But just imagine, you don't have running water to wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine most of us go 10, maybe tops 15 minutes to a grocery store, not even the best grocery store, just someplace you can buy basic things. They have to go an hour, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine some of these elders may never have driven.
True.
And you know what do you say to your grandparents when they need things and you can't even go and pick them up to go get them because you're afraid of giving them coronavirus?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's big. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That huge of a section and a populace, and then you're just losing people left and right. She's a hero, and she was a hero well before the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the need and taking care of care of people.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Before. Yeah.
Yeah. So Miss Linda Myers, you are definitely the Village Hero this week, because you're taking care not only of a marginalized society, but you're helping preserve something that otherwise may be lost.
Yeah.
Like, she's helping something not be lost. And yeah, that's a hero right there. So
definitely,
we definitely tip our hat to you. You are definitely the Village Hero. And I hope she keeps doing this. I hope she gets the funding to further help this and help those in need. And let's go from there. So beautiful job, I must say.
Wonderful.
All right, Village, let's move on here to our next topic here. And this is one that kind of goes without saying. This is some world news here. And I'm going to go ahead and jump on this and screen share with you guys. World must be better prepared for next pandemic, says WHO boss. Geneva, World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom, not even going to try and say that, said on Monday, the world must be better prepared for the next pandemic, as he called on countries to invest in public health. more than 27.19 million people have been reported to be infected by the novel coronavirus globally, and 888,326 have died. Damn, I didn't know it was that many. Wow. According to Reuters tally, since the first cases were identified in China in December of 2019, this will not be the last pandemic, Tedros told a news briefing in Geneva. History teaches us that outbreaks and pandemics are a fact of life. But when the next pandemic comes, the world must be ready, more ready than it was this time. You know, absolutely agree. You know, I'm not going to, I don't want to sit here and go political about this, but, you know, a playbook was given by the former administration, which was Barack Obama's administration. It was given to the incoming Trump administration. Now, if President Trump didn't adhere to that, then that's so be it. But President Obama did say that there would be another pandemic, and he prepared the incoming administration. He prepared them for that. So it really, you know, whether this is, like I said, this is beyond politics at this point. This is beyond a political thing. Yeah. This is about saving people's lives. I don't care about I don't care about your politics. I don't care about any of this stuff. If your goal is not to save lives, then I don't know what to tell you. That's what this is about. It's about saving lives. We shouldn't have to argue about saving lives. Can we argue about the specifics of how to do it? Okay, let's talk about it. But at the end of the day, lives have to be saved. So, you know, and this is another thing, even Maria, I'm going to say it real quick. We got to get away from this two-party system. This two-party system has to go away. That's what that's what one of the biggest problems is that I see. We have a two-party system, and we need to get away from it. Your thoughts on this?
I think it goes bigger than politics. I think this goes bigger than that. You know, one of the reasons that coronavirus hit so many people hard, especially marginalized portions of our countries, not countries, is due to lack of basic medical care, due to proper nutrition, due to proper hygiene. So one of the reasons coronavirus is hitting these populaces and it's taking a lot of people out is, and a lot of the arguments I've heard have to do with people who have these comorbid conditions. Not all comorbid conditions, but a lot of comorbid conditions have to do with how we treat our bodies. How are we healthy? Are we getting the medical care we need for things like diabetes? Are we getting the medical care for, you know, something simple as, oh, I don't know, the rates in which we vape and smoke in a country? Are our kids getting enough nutrition to make sure their bodies can fight this stuff? So yes, we need to be prepared with things like masks and medicines and making sure everyone has basic health care. But I also think it goes to nutrition and even obesity. They said a lot of people that are having problems fighting this have comorbid conditions, obesity, heart conditions, things like that. So I think it's bigger than just are we ready with resources. I think it's are we ready with things like making sure we're teaching basic hygiene before we need it? Are we teaching basic nutrition to our children? Or are we going to continue to be the fast food society here in America? Are we going to continue to eat out of a box? Or are we going to try and, you know, as a country come together and go, we've got to do better in that as well? You know, I think there's so many factors when it comes to a pandemic. I don't just think it's politics. Now, politics, of course, is going to, do we have the right supplies and the right things to make sure that the healthcare needs we have out there are available, of course. But, you know, with especially with the coronavirus, a lot of people who have unfortunately passed is because nutritionally, health-wise, their bodies were not up to fighting it. So how do we fix that? And yes, we can't do things in just small community efforts, although those are great. We have to use, you know, the resources brought about by a government. But, you know, we do have to be ready. We have to be ready. I mean, when we have to tell people in countries to wash their hands, there's a problem.
That's another thing.
A very right basic, yes.
That's a very basic thing to do.
Soap and water, wearing a mask, coughing into your sleeve.
Mm-hmm. The basics.
Getting enough rest. These basic things that, unfortunately, we are such a fast-paced, fast-everything society.
Mm-hmm.
That made a lot of these issues come, a lot of these issues with any pandemic come to light, you know?
Yeah.
I believe one of the horrible, oh gosh, what, it, like the Black Plague was just because fleas that had bitten, got bit rats, then bit us because it was a hygiene thing, right? Mm-hmm. So in 2020, what do we have to do going forward to say, okay, so next year when something else comes along, are we in a better place all around to fight that?
Right.
Do people have better nutrition education? Are we doing a better job of teaching hygiene? Are we making sure that these marginalized communities have what they need
mm-hmm.
to get through something like this?
And thrive.
And thrive. We need to think ahead more of isolating people and how can we have people safely together. You know, it's not just people, elderly people on the Navajo Nation dying in droves. They're now saying that our elders in nursing homes in every community are dying of loneliness. It's not mm-hmm. the coronavirus killing them. They don't have enough human interaction. So how do we fix that?
Right.
So it's this huge conglomerate of pages of information that says another one's coming. We're all an organism that lives on the same planet, multiple mm-hmm. organisms, same planet. Something else is going to come. So what are the steps we need to make sure to take to make sure we can fight it effectively and save more lives?
Right, exactly.
And pretending that it's not going to happen and pretending that everything is okay and these elephants in the room that at this point are tap dancing to, you know, karaoke music or something crazy to get our attention
right.
aren't there. They're there. We have these issues, and instead of fighting about whether who dropped the ball, at this point, I don't care who dropped the ball. Somebody pick the damn ball up
mm-hmm.
and take care of some of these issues.
Right, I agree.
I don't care who dropped the ball. The ball is out of the court, off in the woods somewhere. Somebody go get the damn ball. You know?
Yeah,
somebody,
no, I agree.
Somebody pick it up. Let's get it back on the court. Let's work as a team and let's figure out how to come up with some damn wins at this point.
Right. Yeah, because the numbers will clearly state, and it's about an average of about 1,000 people per day are passing away in the U.S. alone. So,
yeah.
You know, this is, like you said, let's not make this political. Like you said, let's pick up the ball. Let's figure it out. Let's get some wins. Let's all come together. I don't care if you're Republican, yeah. Democrat, Independent, whatever. Let's come together and let's shut this down. That's
how
the best
do we get,
way.
Yeah.
Best
let's
way to do this.
Let's get our country healthier so that they can fight this stuff.
Exactly.
Effectively.
Let's figure this out. Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to our next topic here. And this is one that I found interesting because, you know, you'd be amazed at how many people will fight against this or say it's not true, but here it is. White supremacists are the top terror threat in DHS draft assessments report. All right. So the Department of Homeland Security has prepared 3 draft reports warning that white supremacists are currently the most significant terror threat in the U.S., Politico reported Friday. All 3 drafts reviewed by Politico warn that white supremacists represent an even greater threat than violence from foreign terrorist groups. This is my thoughts on foreign terrorist groups. And I may not even be accurate on this. Maybe this is just my thought process. If you leave them the hell alone, they're probably gonna leave you the hell alone. I think there's some kind of wisdom to, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. Right? I think that's what it is. Now, in regards to domestic terrorism in this country is based on stupidity and ignorance. the fact that you are white, your skin is white, and you believe you are superior to me because your skin is white and you're willing to do things to harm me and others that look like me, says a lot. If you can't, there's no statistical evidence, there's nothing that will say that you are superior to me based on skin color. There is nothing out there. And if you believe that, then so be it. That's your issue. But no, no. If you can present real hard data that says I am white and it makes me superior to you in every way, academically, mentally, physically, medically, all these things, then let's talk about it. Until then, you just, what you're saying is based in ignorance. Okay, so none of the drafts reviewed by Politico mention any threat from Antifa, the anti-fascist movement that President Donald Trump has reportedly characterized as a pressing danger. That's absolutely crap. Listen, Antifa is what they are. They are nowhere near as dangerous as white supremacists. Let's just be honest. The first draft had the strongest language regarding white supremacists, according to Politico. It said that among lone offenders and small cells of individuals, the department has concluded that white supremacist extremists who increasingly are networking with like-minded persons abroad will pose the most persistent and lethal threat. The two subsequent drafts also stated that white supremacist extremists will remain the most persistent and lethal threat in the homeland through 2021. Eve Marie, your thoughts?
You know, it says a lot when they're talking about these small cells who are now linking with people from abroad, like-minded people from abroad. So what this is saying is these white supremacists are now linking with terrorist groups in other countries targeting our country. There's a lot to be said for good things, right? But hate is so strong. Hate will drive people to do some really crazy things. And I do think that they're a threat. They're across the board, these quiet groups in these smaller areas know how to keep to themselves. They know how to keep themselves. They know how to do it quietly. They know how to amass things legally and illegally. They amass knowledge, and whether they're stupid or unintelligent for being white supremacists doesn't mean that they're not good at amassing knowledge and amassing connections. So yeah, I can see how they are just a very big threat. A very, very, very big threat. You know, they know how to keep quiet. They know how to be off in the recesses. And here's the thing. Most people will look at the stupid white supremacists. No, they're stupid because they, in the fact that they're white supremacists, right? But some of the most evil, horrible people in history were really, really smart. Right? And so intelligence your intelligence isn't, it's not, what is the word I'm looking for? It's that kind of night. Just because you're intelligent doesn't always mean you're a good person, right?
Right, yes.
Just because some of the most, or being stupid makes you, you know, a bad person or whatever. But what I'm trying to say is a lot of these small cells have some very, very, very down to earth, very intelligent individuals in them, right? And they're being very quiet about what they're doing. Yes, you they're coming out in masses, but you're only seeing a tip of the iceberg of what's really there, right? Antifa's loud, so we know what's going on with Antifa, right? Antifa's kind of loud.
Really?
They're loud and they're protesting, right? The white supremacists are loud, but they're only showing us a small portion of that. There are so many smaller groups that, yes, they always say it's always the quiet ones. Well, this is our quiet ones. Very intelligent and resourceful people within those groups. Yes, they are a persistent and lethal threat because it's going to come out of nowhere. when this stuff hits, if it hits, if it gets to that point and it's ignored, and everybody's going to be looking at the protesting and the rioting and Antifa, and they're not going to be looking at their neighbors. They're right. not going to be looking in these smaller communities mm-hmm. where
they're not, you know, they're not going to look at the neighbor who has the Trump flag flying proudly from his house.
Or not even Trump. Not you even.
I'm just
you
speaking
know, not
in
even,
general.
Yeah.
Like we have
in
this
general,
association
yeah.
with Trump and the Trump flag.
You're not
going to
look. You're not going to look at your neighbor dots. That you know goes camping quite often is always mm-hmm. taken off with his trailer. Which there's nothing wrong with you doing that. And there's nothing wrong if you're a prepper. I'm not saying those things are wrong. But what I'm saying is there's so much we ignore in our daily lives that these white supremacist groups are involved in. Mm-hmm. And they're small, but there's a lot to be said in a whole lot of small groups that network and connect together. So yeah, I can see where they're a completely horrible mm-hmm. threat to everything that we hold dear as a society.
Right. Agreed there. Agreed.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, this basically keep your head on a swivel, you know?
Yes.
Because that's because at the end of the day, I'm a black man in America. You are on the outside looking in, you're a white woman associated with a black man. Anybody that they can consider a what's the word I'm looking for? That they can consider as someone that helps or aids or is on the wrong team, if you will, can be subject to some kind of harassment or terrible physical actions. So keep your head on a swivel, folks. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Keep your head on a swivel.
Many reasons to keep my head on a swivel when it comes to that type of thing.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, so let's move on here. Next topic. This is one that I'm just absolutely loving. It won't be on this one too long for the sake of time, but I had to say, I had to discuss this. Had to. This
had
is
to.
One. Had to. There we go. Welcoming voters, not fans. Sports teams push for stadiums to become polling sites. I am all for this. Especially.
How do you change things? You vote.
Exactly. Especially the teams that have open air stadiums, you know, like your football teams. I am all for that because then you can isolate people, you can put people in certain areas of the field and have your voting go a certain way. You know, you can do these things. So I'm all for this. The Houston Rockets Toyota Center is a go, while the Miami Heat got stuff and they're not happy. Okay. Professional sports teams and voting advocates want to make casting ballots this fall a slam dunk by turning stadiums and arenas across the country into polling places. I think that even beyond COVID, being able to vote at your local stadium, if you have one, number one, this is why. I think more people will come out and vote. If you get to walk on the floor of where your favorite basketball team or the field of your favorite football team, I think more people are likely to vote. I think people would come out and be like, oh man, we get to go and step on the floor where LeBron plays at. You know, let's go vote. Yeah, why not? If that'll get more people out there voting, whether you vote Republican or Democrat, independent, if it'll get more people out voting, I'm all for this. You get to walk on the floor where the greats play every night. You know, I'm with that. That long bomb touchdown, you get to step on that field. You know, I'm okay with that. Yeah. Because there are some people to this day that can't afford football tickets, but they love their teams. And how cool would it be to be able to possibly have the athletes there, possibly, social distance, of course, and they're like, hey, they're cheering people on as they're voting. I am so for this move. I hope this becomes a thing. And furthermore, Eve Marie, I hope voting becomes a holiday. November 6th should be a holiday. No one should have to work unless you're in the medical field or a service industry, but the special provisions can be made for those individuals. But as far as those that are work for federal or government or local government, whatever the case may be, I think there should be that. I firmly believe that November 6th should be a holiday. Your thoughts, Eve Marie?
I just think it's a cool idea. beyond just, hey, getting people out to vote, you can serve so many more people in an arena than you can serve at your local VFW hall,
mm-hmm.
or a bank or a church. It's more doable. Mm-hmm. More people can get there. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't still have the smaller
places
to vote. Of course. You know, it's still good when you have these smaller polling places.
Small town America needs those places.
You know how many? Yeah. But do you know how many times I heard, "Well, yeah, I'm not going to go vote because I'm going to spend 3 hours in line and my lunch is an hour long. I don't have time for that. I don't have time." Well, if they can get people through faster, make it safer, get people through those lines faster, I'm all for that, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
And that's what I'm talking about.
And you know, I like the idea of buildings being for more than one thing.
Right.
I like that. You know, schools shouldn't just be schools. They should be community centers.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we have a sports arena be a polling place as well?
Right.
We sure as heck take these sports arenas and do, figure skating and
monster truck rallies.
Why can't we use it as a polling place? You know, mm-hmm. I like the idea of using these various venues to be able to accomplish something.
Right.
How often do these arenas sit there with nothing happening but a use of resources while there's not a team playing?
Right.
Or practicing.
And a lot of stadiums just sit empty.
Resource sucker.
Yeah.
Just resource suckers.
And it still has to be maintained. And a lot of this stuff is paid for by the taxpayer. So I say, why not?
Exactly.
Why not? Let's do this. I'm 100% on board with this.
It's very cool.
I think this should be across the country. And I'm not saying small town America needs to travel to wherever to vote at a stadium.
No,
I am simply saying the allure of having your local team, a big team, saying, hey, come and vote at our stadium, and some of the guys are going to be there, social distance, whatever. And I think it's a great idea. So I say, let's do this. I think it needs to happen, man. I really do. I really, really think this needs to happen. So let's just see what happens with this. But again, the bigger piece I want people to understand is November 6th should be a holiday. Nobody should work. Vote. If you work in a service industry, we make special considerations for you. Other than that, no one should be working on voting day. There should be no excuses that you couldn't get to a poll or nothing like that. No. Special provisions.
It's too important.
Right.
Yeah.
Special provisions for healthcare workers. Have a line just for healthcare workers. Have a line for people in the service industry. You know, your
waiters.
Why couldn't we figure out?
And to me, I'm sorry, most restaurants and stuff, that's not even a, you know, they call us essential workers, but truth of the matter is most people can eat at home. But that's just how I feel about it. But at the same time, why couldn't we figure out how to make it available for our firefighters, our healthcare workers, our police officers, our first responders? Why couldn't we have a special way for them to be able to vote without having to leave where they're at?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we making them go to a polling place? They're there to save lives. They're there to, they're there to do these things. Why couldn't they have their own special way that they're able to vote?
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with that. We need to make special provisions for people like that. That's all I'm trying to say. We have to have special provisions. It's just what it is. All right, Eva Marie, for the sake of time, we're going to jump on these village idiots here. And
here we go.
Got a couple of village idiots for you guys.
I get two whole village idiots.
I think I'm... Hold on for a second. Here's the first one. And this is one that I was like, yeah, we've got to do better.
We say that a lot on this show.
California wildfires. Gender reveal party blamed for fires. If you guys don't know about the California fires, it's due in part to a gender reveal. I cannot. A fucking gender reveal. God, every you, this child will never be able to live this down. It'll be like, hey, this, you know, your daddy, you know, your daddy burned down like 3,000 acres of forest, right? You know that. You know your daddy did that for you. You know your daddy destroyed my house to tell the world that you were a boy
or a girl. Right.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about the gender reveal parties, period.
I do.
You know, I think it's exciting to be able to tell your friends and family what you're having. I thought it was kind of exciting to kind of wait to know, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can remember when you, if you knew that you kind of reveal, you kind of did that whole gender reveal thing during the party you had for the baby shower. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we're having a...
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. But
we're getting crazy enough. We're burning down half of a state. That's a little extra.
That's a lot extra. Smoke-generating pyrotechnic device at the event sparked the El Dorado fire, which has now spread over 7,000 acres, Eve Marie. My God. California is currently experiencing a record heat wave. Yes, we are. It was 100 over the weekend, village. I live in the hotter part of San Diego, more desert. It was roughly around 111 degrees between the 3 days, between Friday, Saturday, Sunday, give or take. It was about 111 degrees. It's cooling off
now.
And
it's hot.
But it was hot.
I've been there when it was that hot. It was miserable.
Yeah, it was to the point where I was like, you know what? I brought my dogs in the house and we just sat in the house. Didn't go nowhere, couldn't do nothing. I'm cool. So California experiencing a record heat wave with Los Angeles reporting its highest ever temperature at 121 degrees Fahrenheit. No. I remember being deployed and being full flak jacket. It was about 130 in the shade. That was hot. That was not comfortable. That was so miserable. So miserable. The National Weather Service described Sunday as one of the hottest days since the weather records began across much of southwestern California. Last month, Death Valley National Park in California reported a temperature of 130 degrees Fahrenheit. What could be the highest temperature ever reliably recorded on Earth? Yeah. Let's just go back to the good old days. Back to the good old days.
Hey. It's a boy. It's a girl. You get a card in the mail after the baby's born with a picture in it.
Not even that. Baby shower? Oh, what's the baby's name? This. Okay, so you're having a boy? No, we're having a girl. Okay. Cool. Congratulations. That is all. Don't need to go any more than that, village. You just don't at this point. You don't got to go any further. I'm just giving my honest answer. I do not want to be this child in 20 years.
No.
Like, he's getting his name read or her name read at college, and they're like, that sounds familiar. Wait, didn't your daddy set that whole month? No, it's not me. No, it is you. That is you. So your daddy burned it down to tell everybody that you're a boy, huh?
You know, I think is crazy, it's not even the gender reveals. Those are whatever. It's the length now. Like, you need pyrotechnics mm-hmm. to tell somebody that you're having a boy or a girl. You have gone too far off the deep end.
Hey, you need to back it up. I got an even better one. Remember that commercial where the collect call and the guy goes, I'm gonna make this collect call. Had a baby, it's a boy. And then he hung up. And then the dad was like, it was Chuck. They had a boy. And that was it. Had a baby, it's a boy. 9 pounds, 7 ounces. That's all you got to do. Wrap it up. Cool. Having a boy. Doing too much. You're doing too much.
This is coming from the man that loves babies.
I love babies.
Born babies.
But ain't no way in hell I'm having fireworks to say I'm not dropping that kind of money for a gender reveal. Let's have a baby shower. Let's get some gifts, some cupcakes. Let's play pin the tail on the pamper, and let's keep it pushing.
Just say pin the tail on the pamper?
Yes.
Instead of pin the diaper pin on the pamper?
Whatever the game is called.
I don't know. Evidently, he's going to baby showers for newborn puppies.
Doesn't matter.
Or something. Or just something. Oh, God, I should never have spoken that into existence. Because that's going to be a thing now.
Yeah.
Gender reveals for animals.
Oh, God. All right. Let's step into a little bit, one more Village Idiot here.
One more.
One more. Yeah. Let's go across the pond, shall we?
Oh, no.
13 Queens guards jailed for attending cocaine-fueled Raven lockdown.
Wow.
Yes.
13 of the Queens guards jailed for attending cocaine-fueled rave in lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
What?
13 soldiers who guard Windsor Castle and protect the Queen have been jailed for breaking lockdown rules. They partied with members of the public, which meant they had broken a bubble put in place as the Queen and Prince Philip were shielding inside. The first 13 troops from the Welsh Guards were sentenced last week. Their punishment ranged from 14 to 28 days at the military's Glasshouse Prison in Colchester. It's thought to be the largest number of troops jailed for a single crime at the same time. Four of the men also tested positive for cocaine and will be kicked out of the British Army after serving their sentences. The guardsmen were based at Combermore Barracks in Windsor. The party took place in late June, less than 2 weeks after the Queen attended a socially distanced trooping the color. The first time the ceremony had taken place at Windsor since 1895. During lockdown, the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, or Edinburgh, however you say it, were protected at the castle by what became known as the HMS Bubble, Her Majesty. HMS stands for Her Majesty's Ship. At the height of the pandemic, her 24 servants were split into two teams of 12 who worked 3 weeks on and then 3 weeks off. They also had to spend a week in quarantine before they got back from leave. So, in a nutshell, don't do cocaine. I don't know.
Especially if you're one of Her Majesty's guards.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. I don't know what else to say. Like, first of all, I mean, you're technically the military, so that's number one. You're not supposed to, snort cocaine. You know, last time I checked. I mean,
the Cortain thing. Yeah.
You know, like no, you don't sniff cocaine. In any military. I don't know. Not even in the Colombian military do they snort cocaine. Pretty sure they don't even do it then. Just throwing that out there. Yeah, I said it. I said it.
You said it.
No matter what. Cocaine is not a party drug. It's not.
It's not a party drug?
No. Go get a rum and coke. Or two. Or three. And get a little drunk. Get a little buzz. But cocaine has lasting effects.
Well, and here's the other part of it. They were in their own bubble anyway. They were not supposed to be out partying. Hello, pandemic. COVID.
That part.
You're protecting a leader of an entire nation. So you're under this bubble. I'm sure you're being paid quite well to do it.
Right.
And you decide to go party and do whatever the heck you want.
Beyond
now,
me.
Can you just imagine for a moment what it had to take them to even get to be part of Her Majesty's inner circle?
Mm-hmm. That's like getting on the presidential team for Secret Service, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's along those lines.
And then you go do something stupid.
And like, it wasn't like one or two, it was 13.
Like, 13.
Who
yeah.
in the hell says, hey, blokes?
Don't do the voice. No. Just back off the voice.
I wonder how British people say nose candy. Because they cuss different, too. Like, they cuss real different.
It's called Cockney. Yeah.
It's cussing. Whether it's Cockney. Like, they cuss you out, and you're like, man, what did he just say? You got to get the dictionary and figure out if he called you out your
dictionary.
Name.
The dictionary doesn't even work. You gotta have a translator.
Yeah, there you go.
You gotta have a translator.
So who said, blokes?
Okay, don't do the voice.
Are you in for some Back nose candy? Are you in for some nose candy tonight? What? Just, no, man. You don't do nose candy, bro. You don't do that. No, not cocaine. If you want to go and have a drink, maybe some baby back ribs, go do it.
But cocaine, not if you're in the middle of a pandemic.
No, not in the middle
of a pandemic. Part of the bubble.
Hell, get it delivered. You can get a drink delivered nowadays. Hell, I work for Grubhub. We deliver beer and mixed drinks. I delivered a pitcher of margaritas the other day. Damn it, we do it all. You can get it delivered. Just putting it out there. Eve Marie?
Putting it out there.
Great show.
Yes, sir.
Great show. Some show notes. If you guys want to follow us on Twitter, follow me at Enlighten My Mind. I also handle the Village Twitter handle at W2TheVillage. Eve Marie is at Muse Chaotic. That's at MuseKaotic. If you want to get a hold of us through other means, you can do so on Instagram by searching Welcome to the Village. Facebook, Welcome to the Village. LinkedIn, search for me, Kevin Johnson. Google voicemail is 619-387-8125. And the show can be heard through Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Tumblr, Podomatic, Spotify, YouTube, and of course, LinkedIn. And I'm also working on some other stuff as well. So Village, we are moving right along in the right direction. We are very steady with how the show comes out. I am very thankful that I have a beautiful and amazing co-host to help me do this every week. This is what I needed right here. Just say it.
It's gonna make me blush.
Golly gee. Get it?
Golly gee.
Midwestern golly gee.
Stop it.
All right, Village. As the saying goes, we love you. We thank you. God bless you. Guys, have a great day.
Have a great day.
Yo, we want to thank y'all for listening to The Village. God bless. Good night.